Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
In high school, I had my girlfriend, and then one of my buddies had his girlfriend, but we'd all hang out, and then it was like me and his girlfriend would hang out sometimes, and it was just like, ooh, Anna. So to counteract it, I just told everyone I was way into her elbows, because that's like the least sexual part of anyone's body.
You think so? I think I haven't really gotten over it.
Really?
I think I have. I'm just being weird now.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it's one of the oldest publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk about those dying breeds of music venues, all ages music venues. We will talk about the Shred Shed, Richard Street Art Collective, and Muse Music Cafe down in Provo. Some of you might remember the Shred Shed from when it was originally opened out in the Granary District in Salt Lake City before being shut down by a fire marshal raid in late 2011. The Shred Shed is back, and owner Jesse Kassar spoke with Slug Magazine's Cody Hudson to talk about the new venue.
So how did the idea come about for opening up like a legitimate venue, and how long have you been working on it?
So about the time that the first Shred Shed closed, which was last summer, I immediately was feeling pretty positive and proactive about going legitimate with it. There was a point in Salt Lake not too long ago where we had several awesome all-ages venues downtown, and they have all gone away. And I mean, thank God for Kilby Court for still being here, you know what I mean, doing what they do for so long. If Kilby, for whatever reason, had gone away years ago, it would have hurt Salt Lake City music scene tremendously, obviously. But with Kilby primarily being so well booked, you know, I mean, their calendar is just always full, Sometimes months in advance. It kind of just made sense that there probably, you know, could be use for another venue about similar size right downtown. And the follow-up to that question, last October is when I started the process of reopening this. So it's been about a year. Just started by going into the county building, asking a million questions. You know, I mean, a year later, I'm like on first name basis with a lot of people of the city, just being very inquisitive. And in March, actually it was February when I found the building that I'm currently in. It was for sale. And it was like 5 months of negotiating to get the building owner to be willing to do like a lease option to buy, just to let me get in there. And June is when I signed the lease, and it was another 3 or 4 months of just like red tape with the city, getting the approvals to get my business license. We had some construction to do, and in September we started that construction. I launched a Kickstarter page, which made everything possible. Like the donations and the generosity from the community, it's like overwhelming. It's touching. There was multiple times when my girlfriend and I were just like overwhelmed with positive emotion from people being so supportive. It was really, really cool. Finally got everything done. I actually got my business license the day before the grand opening. It was like right down to the wire. And even when I went in there was like a 5-day waiting period. Thank God I had like built some relationships with people, because they helped me push it through. It worked out perfectly, I guess.
You talked about like a lot of red tape that you had to go through with the city. Did your experience with Crucial Fest the year before kind of help prepare you for that in any way? Was that?
I don't know, kind of. It's a good question. Realistically, Jerem Bischoff, who owns Exigent Records, he's like Loom's original drummer. He dealt with the majority of like the bureaucracy or whatever of the city last year. Crucial Fest is like kind of his baby, you know, and I kind of more so helped with like the organization and booking of it. For the most part too, a lot of the permits and like the departments of the city that we were working with for Crucial Fest versus what I'm doing for the venue were quite a bit different, you know. So I think it helped a little bit. Just the experience of, I guess, choking up and having, you know, swallowing your pride, having some confidence going into the county building, talking to people that are semi-intimidating, you know, if that answers your question at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
how have other local venues responded to you opening up, I guess?
The response has been, like, amazing. It's been, like, nothing but support. I can't think of, like, a single venue or person in Salt Lake that hasn't just been supportive and, like, into the idea and, like, helping me and just wanting this to happen. I mean, we could go through the list. I mean, so Will Sartain and Lance that own and operate Urban and Kilby have been, like, huge supporters. Will Sartain has, like, helped me a lot. He sent me contacts. He's just been a great support. I mean, sending me contacts alone is, like, a huge major thing. I haven't been doing this for 10 years. The connections that I've built for myself are completely via my band.
When you say contacts, do you mean, like, book for booking and stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. Booking agencies and just awesome bands, you know. There's been several recently where they've contacted Kilby Court to have a show there, and he's said to them, I think the show would be a little more well suited to the Shred Shed. I do cater a little bit more to heavier music. We have a wide variety, and I want to continue to have a wide variety of shows. I've got some great hip hop shows. Also, on that same note, Bar Deluxe has definitely been my biggest supporter. Casey Takamoto, that owns the bar, she's been a coach to me, a friend, helping me in, like, absolutely every avenue that you could think of, whether it's, like, support or, you know, just friendship, coming to help run sound. I mean, just everything. She's been there by my side, I mean, since the spring when this thing, like, really started making waves. Bert's Tiki Lounge has been a big support. I've done shows with Bert's where I'll have an early show and then a later show the same night at Bert's, and we'll, like, cross-promote and do two shows for one price type of thing. Multiple promoters and local booking agents have contacted me wanting to do shows. It's been fantastic. It seems like that it's something that Salt Lake City is prepped for right now. You know, I feel like it's a good time for it.
So you're, like, comparing it in size to Kilby Court, and kind of that's the place in the market. So where do you see Shred Shed amongst these other local venues? Is there, like, a certain niche you're trying to fill at all? Or
I guess so, and I think it primarily it's the gap of just an all ages place. I think that a lot of bars, a lot of bands over the last handful of years have almost been forced to only play bar shows, just because we've got a handful of bar options downtown and we've got, like, no all ages options unless you want to go to a larger venue and pay more money, which is something that's just not necessarily feasible for a lot of people. You know, a good amount of, like, spillover that Kilby can't handle, I can help with, you know, and smaller bands that are local that don't necessarily have, like, really any contacts except for their friends' bands that would possibly be friends with Loom can get into the Shred Shed quite a bit easier.
Show since the opening, how's the crowd been? Has it been remaining pretty full?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, all the shows have been good. I mean, from my experience of throwing shows, like, the one thing that you always are kind of hard on yourself about is the turnout. You just, like, you always want more people, you know, it's, like, never really good enough. But every single show since the grand opening, quite frankly, has done well. There, like, hasn't really been a show that's, like, tanked or anything. There's been, you know, 50, 60, 70, over 100 kids at pretty much every show, which is awesome. And the venue itself kind of has its own little following. It's really cool. There's, like, this handful of kids that I've seen at, like, 90% of the shows, like 9 out of 10 shows. There's just these kids that they show up. They're like, who's playing? They don't even know. They just, like, came for the venue, which is, like, just an incredible thing to see. It's, like, something you don't really see too often. And I know that I was a part of that same type of thing for Kilby Court, like, 10 years ago. It's like when I was younger and first started going to shows, I would love going to Kilby just to go, just because it's the energy there and the atmosphere is, like, an amazing thing that I wanted to be a part of, you know? So it's nice to kind of be a part of that again right now, I guess.
Yeah. Is it a lot younger of a crowd?
Yeah, we have Definitely a whole range. I mean, when I was looking for a location, I was like pretty picky, honestly, on this whole idea of being near a bar. So that the bar could reap the benefits and so that people, I guess, closer to my age, our age, of drinking age and prefer to maybe go and have a beer while watching music can still do that while at an all ages venue. And it would also reduce like risk of people trying to sneak booze in, you know, they can go over. Yeah, which is huge because that's a major thing. And even so far we have like people have snuck beer in so far and I've had to like, you know, unfortunately like talk to them, you can't do that. Like we will get shut down. And Kilby Court has that same problem too. Like it's ridiculous, you know, but I don't think people necessarily understand the severity of it. Like I would fully be shut down and so would Kilby Court, any all ages venue, just not allowed. But being right next to the Jackalope, Green Pig, Wasted Space, these other bars, you can walk over to the Jackalope and sit and sip on a beer until the band that you want to see is playing and then come back and watch them. We do have younger kids. Yeah, there's been a good crowd. There was a show, I don't even remember off the top of my head. It was last week. Like everyone that was there was like 16, and that's perfect. And I really am like working to tap more into that because that's the crowd that will obviously like keep the venue alive. I mean, people of my age don't necessarily want to go to an all-ages venue. They'd rather go to Bar Deluxe, Urban, whatever, and socialize with, you know, drinking and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm going to continue to water that so that it grows. Like, putting together a street team right now of high schoolers. Hopefully they can get their, you know, friends in there and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
For more information on the Shred Shed, visit facebook.com/theshredshedSLC. Salt Lake City hardcore band Reviver first came together in 2007 and quickly released a debut album called Versificator in 2008. The band left the label X-Gen Records as the label went under and switched to State of Mind Recordings, releasing an EP called Potential Wasteland in 2010. The band went on hiatus in 2011, but they've gotten back together to play a show at Kilby Court soon, and they have plans to record a new EP. Here's a song from their 2010 EP called Potential Wasteland, and the song is called Traditions.
We fade away patiently.
For more information on Reviver, visit them online at facebook.com/ReviverSLC. Earlier this year, when many underground musical venues were shut down by the fire marshal, bands lost places to play and gigs had to be canceled all over town. The Richard Street Art Collective stepped up to fill the void at a location just north of Spring Mobile Ballpark in Salt Lake City. Slug writer Leandra Jeff sat down with the venue founder, Randall Farrell, to talk about the new all-ages space.
So what inspired you to open a venue?
Well, I've really been impressed with the music scene down in Salt Lake, and that's kind of been a pipe dream for a while to get a venue. I didn't really anticipate that happening at this moment. Really, I was just looking for a place to crash downtown and looked at industrial spaces just because I like that aesthetic. But then when this place came available, started to talk to some people I know in bands that might be looking for practice space and talk to them about that. And Kyle Lutz was one of them. He's had the Stale Street house, quite a few shows over there, and they've been looking to expand and find a larger venue, and so just sort of escalated from there.
What influenced your decision to choose this location specifically?
Really was a bit serendipitous. Just it was a place that was available, and it just happens to work. It's a great location in that it's just a couple blocks from the tracks line, and it is nice that it's right at the edge of downtown. It's mainly industrial right around these couple blocks, so we don't have issues with noise, and so that's been nice. But it's still close enough to downtown that it's a nice location for that reason as well. Now, there's been a small mutiny over calling the name The Blank. We have been calling it The Blank Space.
Blank Space, okay.
But it turns out people like to have labels and like to have things identified. So there's actually been quite a bit of resistance to that, to the point that we've just decided to call it Richard Street.
Okay.
Richard Street Art Collective. So we don't want to pin it down to being something very specific. My whole vision for the place is really to approach it as almost a happening, where we create a space for artists and musicians to create, to expand their technique, to show, and just whatever develops from that.
What other things are you planning on having here besides shows for bands?
Sure, because it is an artist collective and not just a venue, that's just one part of it. We're opening the space to really any kind of artist, but specifically, we are creating a community dark room and photo shoot space. We've tried to collaborate already with some different local organizations, like Spy Hop has come out and done some projects out here. We'd love to get to where we're doing some film screenings of short films and experimental films, and plan on doing that regularly. We've got a few artists that do printmaking, and to make that a part of it. Every Monday evening, we do figure drawing sessions just for artists to be able to come and have that opportunity to hone their skills that way.
Do you hope that the majority of your acts will be large top seller acts, small underground stuff, or a pretty good mixture of both?
Generally underground. I mean, that's really who we're trying to cater to, both underground musicians and artists who might not have an opportunity to play at a decent venue. You know, not that small house shows aren't great, but it's nice to be able to have bigger crowds and a nice setup. And so we're trying to provide a nice venue that also does have that underground feel and maintain that authenticity. Perhaps we're definitely not driven by money.
Right.
Which is probably a double-edged sword. Actually, I just recently brought somebody on, Maddie, to be an administrative director for us. It became evident pretty quickly that an organization run by artists and musicians isn't necessarily a very organized organization.
Right.
So I'm excited to have her on board. She's got a degree in art and communications, so hoping to get going. But most of the acts that we've had come on, we generally do for the shows that we have, we'll have one touring band and then two or three local bands. Mm-hmm. For the touring bands, some of them are signed, some of them aren't, but are more underground.
Right. Kinds of music specifically are you hoping to bring in? What kinds of music?
Really, we don't want to be defined by a specific type of music. I'd like to think we're a bit snobby about quality of music, right. But I think from garage and big bands to pop or rockabilly, I mean, I really envision any type of genre being here. I'd love to, even if it was a classical act. Or we've actually been talking to a couple small theater troupes even in town. I'd love to mix up shows to where maybe we start with a short film made by a local filmmaker, you know, do something with a theater troupe. You know, so not even just mix up the genres of music, but different types of art forms as well.
What are the pros and cons of this being an all-ages venue versus a 21 and up venue?
There's definitely some money-making possibilities if we were to become a 21 and over venue with liquor sales, obviously. But I don't know. I don't really see there being a lot of disadvantages to being an all-ages venue. I think that if anything, Salt Lake needs more all-ages venues. I'd like to start getting some more of even high school bands, giving them an opportunity to play with some of the more established bands. I see there being a lot of pros to being an all-ages venue, and I'm really not too concerned about trying to be anything but that. I imagine we will have a few specific events that will be 21 and over, but those would be event-specific.
What is the maximum capacity of the venue?
We're keeping it under 100, and when we do become official, which will probably be at the beginning of the year, we'll probably keep it under 100 people capacity, which to me is fine. I think that I like that smaller feel. And, I kind of like that we're sort of a word-of-mouth space as well. And so if you're here, it's because you know about it, because you heard about it. And we are going to also be trying to feature a local artist each month. And we'll have a show and gallery opening for that artist at the beginning of each month and keep their work up throughout the month. And at each show, we'll have, in addition to a merch table, an art table with pieces from that artist in addition to other local artists for sale.
What previous experience do you have that you feel prepares you to run a venue?
Absolutely none.
Right.
It's really... This space works because of the people that have been involved. I've personally put some of the wheels into motion, but it's continuing and it's been successful because there's a lot of people that are looking for a space like this, and the energy and willingness to be a part of it has been phenomenal. We've had groups of artists and musicians come in and just volunteer their time for building and they volunteer their time for the shows. A lot, nearly all of the material to build out the space has been donated. I've got a lot of very resourceful people that have been on my team. I don't know as if all of the people who've donated material are aware that they've donated material, but I'm absolutely certain that they're better off for it.
Right. What do you see as your largest local competitors around here venue-wise, and how do you plan to keep your influx of music that's a little less underground in this area?
Yeah, you know, and I hate to really think of it as who our competitors are. I'm really not trying to compete with anyone. K Kilby Court is probably the closest in terms of the types of bands that are coming through there, but certainly we're not trying to compete with Will in any way. If anything, we need more Kilby Courts in the city, more all ages venues. And the one who does most of our booking is Joey Mays with Dead City Promotions. Mm-hmm. And he's been able to pull in. He has a lot of connections, as do a number of the bands. Two of the people I've worked with a lot on this project, Kyle Lutz and Chaz Costello from local band Jaws and Sleepwalker, and a couple other bands have really been critical in bringing in a lot of our touring bands. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's just a lot of word of mouth. Who local bands know. We're just trying to support it. The bands that we see as being reflective of what the kind of music we want to keep promoting. And I don't think we're lacking for quality music in Salt Lake and throughout the country, but so I really don't see competition being part of it. We could use some more venues like this, for sure.
Where did your passion for music and art come from?
I did study art and architecture in college, and I've always been drawn to music. I donate a lot of my time, volunteer a lot with Headcount. They're a national organization that goes to shows and registers people to vote. And I think that that's where I started thinking about the possibilities of getting a venue up and going in Salt Lake. But I think that art and music are what makes life beautiful and enjoyable, and so it's hard for me not to be drawn to that. And again, not to any one particular medium or style. I really hope that this space becomes a space of collaboration and experimentation. I'd love to see more of a guerrilla art movement emerge in Salt Lake, and if some of that comes out of the space, I certainly wouldn't complain.
The Richard Street Art Collective currently doesn't have an official website, so much of the show promotion is being done by the bands and word of mouth. You can find the location at 1133 South Richard Street in Salt Lake City. This is your weekly daily calendar for December 11th through December 17th. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com. Check out the listings. They are updated virtually every day. And of course, you can add your own events. That's for free. You can also add a little bonus content for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year. On Wednesday, December 12th and Thursday, December 13th, a local collective called the Lower Lights is playing a couple of Christmas shows at the Masonic Temple. Members of Fictionist, The Moth and the Flame, Paul Jacobson and the Madison Arm, they're all involved with this group. Real rootsy, they do a lot of traditional Christmas stuff. They do some old country. You'll find some Hank Williams in there. Yes, it is a Christmas show. Yes, it is family friendly. But if you've never been to the Masonic Temple, it is a trip and well worth the visit. You can go wander off, check out some of the other rooms. That's what I did last year at the show. It's a great time. TheLowerLights.com for any more information about that show. On Thursday, December 13th, and Friday, December 14th, Brandi Carlile, who is pretty much becoming the Howard Jones of sort of alt-folky people, coming back to town for a couple shows at the State Room. She is here multiple times a year, always puts on a fine live show. Her new record, Bear Creek, is one of the better ones of the year, really, and definitely the best one of her career. Also on Friday, December 14th, Ozo Motley, the Latin hip-hop collective out of Los Angeles, coming to play at Park City Live in Park City. Always an automatic great live show when they come to town. And that night, if you're staying right here in Salt Lake City, you'll want to go to Slug Localized, where you can hear Spirit Master, Albino Father, and Rainbow Black at Urban Lounge for a mere $5. On Saturday, December 15th, you're going to have my favorite show of the week, Justin Towns Earl, son of Steve Earl, headlining at the State Room. His record, Nothing's Gonna Change the Way You Feel About Me Now, is one of my top five of the year. If you like real hardcore roots country, and I certainly do, you can do a lot worse than Justin Towns Earl. He puts on a great show. Trixie Whitley is opening that one. Also that night, Art Adoption at the Signed and Numbered Gallery over at 2320 Southwest Temple. You can go enjoy some local art, stock up on some gifts for the people you know, have a couple cold beers. Artists like Sri Whipple, Trent Call, Leah Bell, Derek Carlile, among many, many more. All their stuff will be there. That's from 7 to 11 p.m. on Saturday, December 15th. And on Sunday, December 16th, the Winterland Aerial Showcase is taking over the Sugar Space in Sugar House. Lots of dancers from all over the valley. Aerialists will spin and twirl all over the damn place. And on a Sunday night, it's pretty hard to find people spinning around poles outside of the strip clubs of Salt Lake City. So here's your perfect opportunity. Just $25. That goes from 7 to 10 o'clock at the Sugar Space on Sunday, December 16th. Once again, go to slugmag.com, check out the daily calendar every day, and see what's going on all over Salt Lake City. Velour is certainly one of our more revered all-ages venues in the state, and every year they do a special All-Star Christmas concert, which collects a bunch of musicians from a bunch of your favorite local bands, doing little one-off performances, maybe some solo things from lead singers, maybe something acoustic, a lot of different things. This year, the show is on December 15th down at Velour in Provo. Last year's showcase included Stuart Maxfield of Fictionist, Isaac Russell, Ryan Innes, Chance Lewis and Apt, among many more, and it also had Brandon Robbins of The Moth and the Flame. We're going to play a little bit of The Moth and the Flame right now. This is Home off of their 2011 debut self-titled album.
In everyone's heart, there is a place. In everyone's heart, where love is the food, love is the air inside of this place. It's all very common here. It's all very common. In everyone's heart, there is a place. In everyone's heart, there is a table in everyone's heart, and we have a seat. And there is a home in everyone's heart where we go to sleep. And there is a family in everyone's heart dying to meet. Very common here. It's all very common here. It's all very common here at home. It's all very common. It's all very common here at home. It's all very common.
Oh,
all very common.
For more information about The Moth and the Flame, visit the band online at howwewokeup.com. And for more information about Velour's Christmas All-Star Special, go to velourlive.com. They're still putting together the artists for this year's show. The Muse Music Cafe is probably the longest-running all-ages venue down in Utah County. It's located on the 100 block of downtown Provo. Velour's Corey Fox actually used to work there before he opened his own place, and bands like The Used, Fictionist, and Neon Trees have all gone through the Muse stage at one point or another. They've gone through several ownership changes throughout the years, including one earlier this year. So Slug writer Steve Richardson sat down at the Muse recording studio to talk with the new co-owners, Darcy Roy and Debbie Phillips, about the venue.
Both of you came from out of state, and it's kind of like, how long have you guys been here?
I moved here, it'll be 2 years in April.
I just came in December. I was in school, I'd gone back to school when she moved here, and then kept hearing all the feedback from her about the local scene and all these great bands, and that there were two venues, and I came to visit her pretty much like once a month for a few months. You know, I've been in the Bay Area for a long time, and as you can imagine, the cost of living is really high there.
Yeah.
What I was doing at the time, strictly doing at the time, focusing on the social media marketing things, I was an independent contractor. I was doing everything via online. I was like, well, why not start somewhere new? And especially when I found out that I could rent a house for the same price I was paying for my one-bedroom apartment. So.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that.
I decided, why not? And so decided to, when I finished my certificate program, that I would relocate here. And I think I finished it a week and a half before I moved. So
just don't waste any time.
Yeah, no, nope. Why not? You know, gotta take a risk and jump in, so.
How's the experience compared to what you expected when you came into it after you bought in? Has it changed much since before you bought in? Like you said, you're doing a lot before that.
Not that much. I mean, there is that additional pressure that, you know, now we're owners versus just staff. Music venues are not the most profitable ventures. And it's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But now I feel like there is going to be a reward in the long run. Whether that be financial, you know, it's not going to be a big financial reward, but eventually we'll start, you know, making some money off of the venue. But mostly it's just, I love being able to walk into a show and watch a band perform and be like, I was a part of this. I helped make this happen. I helped put this together so that these people can be standing in front of these musicians and they can be having this experience. And that's a pretty amazing thing. I, like Darcy, have been attending live music shows since I think my first concert was when I was 8. And I've been a concert addict since then, especially living in the Bay Area. You know, I was going to shows every other week. For a while, I had a friend that was working for a record distributor up in the Sacramento Valley, so he was always getting free shows, free tickets to shows, and would call me up and say, hey, I'm coming down there for a show, you want to go? So, you know, I definitely love the live music experience, and, you know, not a lot of people, not everyone understands that. Some people are okay with just listening to music on the CD player or on the, you know, on their MP3 or on the radio, but I've always found that the live experience is just a whole different level. It makes me very happy to be a part of creating that. I think that sense of satisfaction is probably the biggest difference. Duties-wise, it's pretty much the same, except that we get to make decisions, and sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad.
Yeah, it's a little more pressure.
For me, I work a full-time job in addition to this, because like she said, it's not exactly profitable yet. So when I wasn't an owner, at least when I was feeling overburdened with something, I could step back and be, hey, you know what, I've got to focus on the one that pays my bills and gives me health insurance and that kind of a thing, and I would just step back. And now I don't have that option. This needs to succeed, or I don't feel like I have a purpose in Provo unless I can make this happen. This is what I want to do.
Since you guys took over, what's changed? How have you like made the muse your own?
We've been trying to make it a little bit more professional in terms of the relationships with the musicians. I think that's a lot to do with me coming from the Bay Area and working with venues in the Bay Area. Even the smallest ones had, you know, band agreements and a level of standards in terms of sound and a level of standards in terms of how bands interact with the venue. And I'm definitely one, from my experience in management situations, communication is extremely important. And if we're all on the same page, then everything moves a lot more effectively and efficiently, and that works for both the staff and the musicians. And so I think that, you know, when I came in before I was an owner, you know, I was doing the business management, and I formalized a lot of things, you know, getting some payroll things in order, getting just some basic processes in order in terms of cash handling, all that boring kind of stuff. Yeah. But it started to make things a little bit more professional, and I'll give everybody a sense that this is a business. This was not, because I think that some managers have a way of running things where it's just kind of like, yeah, whatever goes, yeah, it's really cool, it's laid back. And I love that sense of community that comes from that, but then unfortunately things tend to fall through the cracks. And so we were trying to prevent mainly things from falling through the cracks, because we want to have both our customers, our audience, and our bands have consistent experiences here. We've put things into place to make that happen. And I think that that's, I think it's ended up quite nicely, especially for the staff. They know, they have a routine, you know, this is our standards, this is what we have to strive for, and if we exceed those standards, that's great. But, you know, this is our minimum standards. This is where we have to shoot for. And I think it has given kind of everybody a goal and a sense of direction. So.
Our primary goal is we want the venue to succeed, obviously, for us to have a business that succeeds, but we also want to offer a place that musicians can grow. And if they can get to the point where they can just do music, then that's fantastic. Or if they can do what they love, even if they're not making a living from it, and just do it on a consistent basis so that they're prepared to, you know, they could go to tour in any other venue and they know that there's the same base standards, they know that this is how you can network, this is, you know, how to build business relationships and stuff, and a lot of the sideline stuff that kind of gets overlooked. It's one thing to just, you know, say, hey, my band's gonna jam tonight, and if they don't care about making money, then that's cool. A lot of bands don't care about making money, but to be able to not just basically rehearse in a public space, but actually perform, actually give a memorable performance that, you know, has an audience stand up, take notice, get their name buzzing around, get the word out about them to find out how great they are and grow them as an artist as well.
So you said it's hard to make money in owning a venue. A lot of venue owners do it through alcohol sales, but you guys are staying all ages. And do you think that's important to be all ages? And like, what importance do you see in that?
Provo definitely needs an all ages venue. It definitely needs a place where all music is accessible to all levels. I mean, we have high school kids coming in here all the time. We have, yeah, college kids, adults. We do have at least one alcohol venue in town, and it's great for what it is, but it does limit. I mean, we're in a college town, and we're in a town where a lot of the culture doesn't even want to go into a bar. So it's great to have a place that anyone can go to listen to their friends and not feel uncomfortable or be turned away at the door because they're not old enough, that kind of a thing. So yeah, it's definitely, we keep afloat, not just from the venue, but we added the cafe menu back in, extended a few things, made it affordable stuff so that, you know, broke musicians and college students can afford to eat off the menu. The studio time, the studio offsets some of our costs as well to try and make us break even overall to be able to stay open, where alcohol sales would normally offset that.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, we had Colin put on a great band camp this last summer for, I don't remember what the age range was, but I think the youngest person was probably 10 and the oldest was probably 14 or 15. And they did a week-long band camp where they learned to play with each other. They talked about songwriting. They each did their own songs and recorded them. And then they had a little kind of showcase at the end of the week for the family and friends. And I think that, you know, unless we continue to encourage young people to go into music, to be interested in music, you know, there's not a lot of resources. You know, we watch, you know, public funding, public school funding for music programs be cut again and again and again. Not just music, but for, you know, the arts, you know, of any sort, whether it be, you know, visual arts or dramatic arts or anything. So anything we can do to keep that moving in a positive direction is great. I recently hosted a class of kids from the Walden School, came down for a kind of, they were interested in, it was a career exploration class.
Is Walden just like a local elementary?
It's 6th to 8th, it's a private school, but they have much different classes. So this was a career exploration class, and the kids were interested in music. And so rather than just looking at musicians, they were looking at, well, what other things can you do with music as a career? And so they came down and we talked about all the different things that we do here, you know, the studio, live sound, the business side of things, and we talked about all the different career options within that. And I think that's really important too. I think that if I had that as a teenager, I may have ended up in the business side of music a lot earlier than I did. Mm-hmm. They had great questions, and, you know, and that's the kind of thing we want to encourage. And whether that be band camp or classes coming in, or we had a couple of, I think, 8 and 10 year olds in an open mic one night because they started taking guitar classes and wanted to try it out in public. And, you know, we want to encourage all of that and encourage the, you know, the high school bands that, you know, they're very serious about what they want to do, and so, you know, we want to have a place that they can play. We kind of envision we talk about shepherding baby bands, you know, matching, eventually maybe putting together some sort of informal mentor-mentee kind of thing where a more established band can help a newer band kind of understand what it is to be a part of the music scene in Provo and to make music a part of your life.
For more information about Muse Music Cafe and its recording studio, visit them online at musemusiccafe.com. As always, thank you for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground, and for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit slugmag.com. We want to know what your favorite local album is from 2012. We'll be doing a show dedicated to our own favorites, and we'd like to hear what you have to say about it. Please give us a call at 858-233-9324. That is our automated voicemail line, or you can drop us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com and let us know your favorite local release of 2012. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. Associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and technical design by Kate Colgan. Be sure to join us next week when we'll be talking to the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art, the Dunce Art School, and Connect at the SLC Arts Hub. It's an arts-full episode next week on Soundwaves from the Underground. We'll see you then.